Blog Talk Radio.
This morning,
said the morning news show on. Brian Campbell was talking about the fighting in Lebanon. Some senator was talking about the bad economy. It's gonna get worse, you see. Need a change of policy. Read the local paper, rolled in a rubber band. One more sad story, one more than I can stand. Just one, how I'd like to see the headline say, not much to print today. Can't find nothing there to say. Because nobody robbed a liquor store on the lower part of town. Nobody OD'd, nobody burned a single building down. Nobody fired a shot in anger, nobody had to die in vain. We sure could use a little good news today. I'm home this evening, I bet that the news will be the same. Somebody takes a hostage, somebody steals a plane. How I want to hear the anchor man talk about a county fair, and how we cleaned up the air, how everybody learned to care. Oh, tell me, no.
Hello, everybody. It's Monday night, and that means it's time for the Constitution Hour. A little throwback there with Miss Ann Murray. A little good news today. Isn't it funny, or sad, just how accurate that song still is today? It really gives a window into the state of the world, as it were. And I'm going to say something tonight that might surprise some of you, and it may even offend some of you. But I believe that the policy of Barack Hussein Obama in regards to Iraq and Syria are working. I heard this evening on the news that Egypt and Saudi Arabia are kind of joining up together because of civil unrest going on in Libya. Now, let's not forget that it was our foreign policy that created the disaster that is Libya today. Let us also not forget that it was our foreign policy that created the disaster that is Iraq today. It has been our ongoing foreign policy that is exacerbating the disaster that is Syria today. But when I say that I believe that his policy of hands-off is being effective is borne out by the CIA threat and the war hawks swooning in Congress as we continue to hear ratcheting up of the rhetoric surrounding this mysterious group, ISIS or ISIL or ISIL or whatever the hell they want to call them today. Can we just be honest and say the militant Muslim groups that the U.S. has trained terrorist tactics are growing restless? We hear or heard for quite some time all these horrendous reports of ISIS killing Christians in these countries. But, ladies and gentlemen, make no mistake, this group has murdered or killed more Muslims than they have Christians. Now, you could argue that it's simply targets of opportunity. There are more Muslims than Christians in that part of the world. So as a percentage, they're a much larger group. But there are some things that really stick in my craw with this whole ISIS parade. I feel like I'm watching one long, protracted infomercial for ISIS. I touched on this a little bit last week, and I guess, you know, because it's still in the news today and will continue to be in the news, I'm going to continue to talk about it because I think it's important to look at, remember what I've told you before, what is it you're being sold? You're being sold on a daily basis just how terrible these guys are. And I want you to remember back to the war in Iraq, the continuation, the second chapter in the war in Iraq. And we remember when support for the war in Iraq was really waning. You know, we'd gone in militarily and effectively kicked their Saddam's derriere in very short order. But then things got a little hectic. And if you'll recall, back in those days, at the height of people's wanting to get out of Iraq, there started to arise news stories. It was one of the things that the government really wanted to establish was that there were Muslim terrorists in Iraq. You remember that? And it was before they started really talking real big about Al-Qaeda in Iraq. But there had been some talk of it. And then there was this news story that came out that a group of Muslim extremists bombed or drove a tank into a local police station in one of the small towns, Kirkuk or Tikrit, I don't remember which, and to break out their buddies that were being held in the local jail there by the equivalent of the local sheriff. Problem they ran into is that the guys got caught, and lo and behold, they weren't Al-Qaeda terrorists or a bunch of Muslim terrorists, pardon me, got some 800 line calling me. It turned out they were a bunch of British Special Forces soldiers dressed up, dolled up, like Muslim Arabs, and they had some explosives and things in a car, and they were going to set off a car bomb. Does anybody remember that? And then it wasn't too long after that, and I don't remember if this is a which came first, the chicken or the egg, but within that same era or time frame, we had a guy named Daniel Pearl. Remember Daniel Pearl? Daniel Pearl was an American journalist who was embedded over in Iraq. Does anybody remember what happened to old Danny Pearl? Well, it was the first time that I knew of, at least, or that I can remember, of the Muslim extremist terrorists, Al-Qaeda, whatever you want to call them, utilizing a very American and interweb tool called YouTube. And they posted a video allegedly depicting the decapitation of Daniel Pearl. And there's some interesting parallels that you can draw between that video and the latest video of the young man Ferguson, or not Ferguson, God, Fuller, I believe his name is, the latest journalist to be beheaded in Iraq by Muslim extremists. Now, in the video with Mr. Pearl, it took place inside of a what I would call a hastily built facility. It was clearly plywood and 2x4s. But the interesting thing to me was the actor who was wielding the knife, the dastardly weapon of destruction, was dressed all in black. But he was wearing an interesting wristwatch and an interesting wedding band. And Mr. Pearl was dressed in an orange prison jumpsuit. Now, that video, I believe, was used as propaganda to bolster American support for the mission in Iraq. Fast forward several years later, we have presumably pulled our troops out of Iraq, except for the ones guarding the largest U.S. embassy in the world in Iraq. So things aren't going very well. And so, you know, this group up in Syria, who's been fighting the Syrian government up there, presumably with funding and assistance from the United States government, because after all, we don't like Assad because he's a really bad guy. They've decided to now turn their attention towards Iraq. That's what we're told. That's what we're being sold, you see. You're told these things, but do you know them to be accurate and true? Then we're told that this group, ISIS, is they are so evil, so dastardly. They show such disregard for human life and dignity that even Al-Qaeda is afraid of them. Well, now, I'm sorry, but let's back up. Is this the same Al-Qaeda that allegedly was sawing off the head of a journalist in Iraq all those years ago, who, by the way, was wearing an orange prison jumpsuit? It seems to me like these guys, if you're trying to differentiate, I really don't see the difference between the two groups. Quite honestly, they both have the same modus operandi. And so here we are, the hawks, they're not liking what's going on in Iraq. And, you know, there's a lot of contracts that are going to dry up and a lot of money that's going to evaporate because we're no longer in all-out operations in Iraq or Afghanistan, for that matter. So there's a lot of money at stake. Make no mistake about that, folks. So here we have this latest video that comes out. And Mr. Foley, thank you, Mike, is allegedly shown, wouldn't you know it, in an orange prison suit, very calmly gives a recantation of, he's about to die. He's going to have his head sawed off. He was pretty calm about the whole thing. And then, of course, the doer, the bad guy, the evil doer, is dressed all in black, sporting a wedding band, I might add, and wouldn't you know it, he's got a dang British accent. So it's been discovered by experts who look at these kind of things, forensic video experts, that the video itself was actually staged. That's right. It was staged. Now, ladies and gentlemen, if ISIL is truly this mean, evil, nasty, horrid bunch of evildoer commie scum Muslim scumbags, right? Why would they stage a video? Why not simply go out there and lop the guy's head off and say, see here, this is what's going to happen to you? But no, they stage a video and then show a body with what looks to be the head cut off resting on his back. I don't get it. It makes no sense. If you want to make a statement by decapitating someone, cut their head off. Why all the shenanigans? Why have to go through all the things that must be done to put up a bogus video to make it look like you've cut somebody's head off? Now, I'm not doubting whether or not the guy was killed. I don't doubt that he got his head cut off. But it didn't happen in that video. That is the consensus of the experts, not just me. And it's not the Brits that are trying to pull us into whatever's going on there. Cal, I guess maybe it could be, but I believe that what you're seeing is nothing less than an intelligence agency, CIA propaganda video designed to incite anger and reactional emotion from the American people. And it's working on quite a few. And don't forget that following very close on the heels of this video, we have senators, U.S. senators, saying that this ISIL is working on building a massive bomb to blow up an entire U.S. city. Well, hell, they don't need explosives. Congress has blown up several cities in the United States without firing a shot or using any explosives whatsoever. Just sheer federal government policy has destroyed a number of U.S. cities. But that's a whole other topic. All I'm trying to tell you guys, I'm not buying it. I think it's a bunch of hokum. You're being fooled. You're being told now to expect an attack on a major U.S. city. And we're coming up. Does anybody know what, September, we're coming into September, aren't we? Surely, ladies and gentlemen, we could not play out another September 11th attack in the United States, could we? I mean, would the American people fall for that a second time? Because there are some things that are very clear, to me at least, about 9/11. And the one thing that is most clear is that we don't have the full story. And the 9/11 Commission report is sorely lacking. There was never an actual in-depth investigation into exactly what happened. And we have people like Miss Singh, who used to work for J.P. Morgan, and people like Sybil Edmonds, who worked for the FBI, who have been told, shut your mouth. Don't say a word. We have the gentleman Peter Dale Scott, and while I disagree vehemently with his political ideology, he, in writing his book, The Road to 9/11, when he stumbled across the drug money connection to 9/11, he was told in no uncertain terms, you say anything about this and you're a dead man. He mentioned it in his book that he was told it would be the end of him. And he said no more about the drug connection, the drug money, the drug laundering that presumably went through BCIC Bank, the very same bank that's been running the CIA was using back in the 80s and 90s and the 2000s, the same affiliations that go back to the Clintons, the CIA, cocaine and heroin trafficking in the United States, and your own very, very own federal government. And we have to wonder who has the most to gain. You know, and we're told somehow they know this. They know all these things about ISIL. They know, for instance, that there's 12,000 of them, 12,000 members of ISIL. And they know that they're really nasty, evil, mean, bad guys. And I'm going to posit to you, ladies and gentlemen, that a good number of these evil, bad, mean guys are actually on your own government's payroll. Not the average foot soldier, but the guys that trained them, the guys that act as their leadership, guys that we've known about that have been on watch lists, that the State Department has been trying to keep out of the United States, that the CIA has continually allowed into the United States, issuing them visas and passports, giving them training at military bases. Hell, one of them was a sergeant in the U.S. Special Forces. Let's not delude ourselves, ladies and gentlemen. Let's not buy into the fear-mongering that's being put in place. And let's do look at what some of the other governments around the area are doing. You see, there's this conception, I believe, that if the United States doesn't do it, well, then nobody's going to do anything. But I got to tell you that I believe that the government of Saudi Arabia, the government of Egypt, the government of Iran, the government of Israel, they're going to do what every government does when faced with annihilation. They're going to defend their hegemony. They're going to defend their supremacy in the area, don't you think? I mean, do you honestly believe that the Saudi Arabian government is just going to roll over? And I know there's been this big deal trying to play this connection, and that's also another little interesting twist, that they're trying to play a connection between ISIL and Saudi Arabia and the Wahhabist form of version of Islam. Well, let's not forget that the U.S. has a base in Saudi Arabia. We've given them military equipment, and we've got a long-standing arrangement with Saudi Arabia regarding oil sales. Now, there's no doubt that the Saudis sell more oil than any other nation on the planet. But there's also no doubt that the Saudis have been talking to the Russians. And the Russians, well, we don't like them because they threw a wrench in our works over in the Ukraine. Now let's look at the Ukraine for a moment, and let's look at the former Soviet Union and the breakup of that Soviet Union and the resulting nation states like Ukraine and the Baltic states. Let's look at the newly formed states up in the Caspian area, what they call the Caspian Basin. You know, the Caspian Basin has quite a large supply of oil and natural gas. And going all the way back to the early 90s, during the Clinton administration, a Democrat, I would add, there were some companies that were working feverishly with Uzbekistan and a few others to get contracts for the rights to the gas and oil. Now, we know that the Ukraine, there's a problem with natural gas, right? And where does all their natural gas come from? It comes from Russia. And where does Europe get the majority of its natural gas from? That's right, Russia. So you can imagine if the U.S. companies could secure a reliable supply of natural gas from these former Soviet republics and get that natural gas to Europe. Holy cow. Looky here. We're going to shortcut or undercut the Russians, and they won't be able to use natural gas as a pressure point or bargaining chip against Europe and the European Union or the Ukraine for that matter. So there's a big, this is why the Ukraine is such a big deal right now. You see, that pipeline runs across the Ukraine into Europe. Ukraine controls that pipeline. Russia would have to build something to go around it if the Ukrainians really want to play the Trump card and blow the damn thing up, which they very well could. But that's kind of cutting off your nose to spite your face. The point is that there's a lot of things hiding under the surface. Things aren't always what they seem. And we were working very tirelessly, and when I say we, I mean the United States government, in trying to accomplish getting a gas and oil pipeline built across Afghanistan into Pakistan. A couple of former UNICAL employees ended up in some very interesting job positions after the attack in Afghanistan. One was Condoleezza Rice, and the other was Hamid Karzai, the guy that became the elected president of Afghanistan. What are the odds of that? I'd say they're just about as good as the odds of 19 Muslims getting box cutters, boarding airplanes, and carrying out the largest attack on U.S. civilians in the history of our nation. A lot of things had to happen for 9/11 to happen. You realize that for decades, largely because of the Cold War, the United States had an intercept policy for aircraft. That intercept policy did not go through a huge chain of command and a large bureaucracy. No, that was left to individuals on the ground, pilots and their squadron commanders, the base commanders, and the FAA. And if an aircraft, civilian or otherwise, went offline and was not responsive, they couldn't raise them on the radio, aircraft were scrambled. They didn't have to call and get permission from anyone. It was automatic. There was a series of protocols or steps, a chain of command that you followed. And, you know, if one thing happened, that triggered the next step. And if that step was completed, that triggered the next step. And if that was triggered, planes were put in the air to see what was going on. But that all changed, you see. That changed in June of 2001. In June of 2001, all of that operations, all of our air defenses were all put together under FEMA, a fairly new organization at the time, one that was created largely through the Iran-Contra dealings. That's another story. And one individual was given complete authority over FEMA, and he directed all the training. Let's not forget that there were at least 5, and by some counts 11, separate training exercises being conducted on 9/11. And this individual He went in and he changed the intercept protocol. No aircraft could be launched for intercept without his direct authorization. No shoot-down order could be given or carried out unless it came from him. And that one individual is named Dick Cheney. So in the months leading up to September 11th, we had a change, a major change in the way that our air defense system functions. And we had several training exercises. And those training exercises, interestingly enough, created a lot of chaos for those who were running radar on 9/11. One of the ways that was accomplished was that we had false radar signatures put onto the radar screens of many of the air traffic controllers. According to the 9/11 Commission report, as many as 23 false radar signatures were put on various radar screens. Patriot CH is exactly correct. He testified in private, and they never testified under oath. Several different accounts of a timeline for Dick Cheney and Donald Rumsfeld that very day. Three different accounts came from Cheney's mouth himself. The account that they finally settled on in the 9/11 Commission report came from an interview that Dick Cheney did several months later on a television news program and from the notes of the diary of Lynn Cheney, his wife. Guys, smells like crap. It's crap. And this whole thing stinks. And you are being sold an enormous bill of goods. Imagine, think about the implications of what you're being told right now. Your government is telling you to expect an attack by a terrorist organization on a major U.S. city. They are telling you that it's going to happen. They are telling you to be afraid. It's disgusting. One would have to ask the obvious question, if this is the end game of all of our efforts, why do we spend trillions of dollars on national defense if, as has been shown and continues to be shown, we either can't or won't defend the boundaries of the United States of America? Hell, they won't even stop illegal immigrants from coming across the border. Is it any wonder why they would be worried? Even if they weren't, as I believe, involved. And why is it that the vast majority of the American people aren't standing up and demanding some answers from their government? They are, after all, supposed to be providing for the common defense, right? I mean, that's the reason we pay high taxes. That's one of the major things that our taxes are supposed to be funding, is our defense. And yet, they refuse, ladies and gentlemen, to defend you. They refuse. They sit back and laugh while you're being overrun. Now, that doesn't sound very damned patriotic to me. I want to shift gears a little bit. Last week, if you were with us, I talked about money, checks, money, who is responsible for what we use as money, $20 bill or a $10 bill or a $5 bill. It's a bill. It's a bill drawn on an imaginary account that has your name on it. You are responsible for repaying that bill, that IOU. We all are. The government creates it. They sell it. Then they buy it back at face value plus interest. That creates a loan. Every single penny is your obligation and mine. We are made liable to repay all the loans, which some of which are floating around in the form of Federal Reserve notes. So that begs me another question here. We know that we cannot pay a debt with a debt, right? Those notes, those bills just keep passing around from one hand to another, never actually paying a debt. It's just a transfer. So the debt keeps getting transferred from one set of books to another within the system itself. Now, I'm not saying that that's entirely a bad thing. The question is, if we know it's a debt and it's an obligation of ours, how does it, ladies and gentlemen, make any sense whatsoever for you and I, once a year, to fill out a form and send some of that debt back to Washington, D.C.? What are they going to do with it? It's the same money. It's the same debt. It makes no sense. It doesn't accomplish what they claim. You're not paying your taxes. You're just simply not. You can't pay a debt with a debt. You can't pay off $20 bills by sending in $20 bills. It can't be done. The only thing that remains is that it's just a mechanism to make sure you understand who's in control, who owns you. And that's exactly what it does, and that's all that it does. It doesn't create new money or new debt in the system to pay off the old debt. That's just nonsense. It only does one thing. It establishes, legitimizes, and firmly plants in your mind that the government is in control, and you're not. With that, I'm going to bring in Miss Linda, and I believe Mr. Robert has been waiting very patiently. So, guys, welcome aboard. Miss Linda, how are you? Robert?
Hey,
hi, guys.
Mr. Ron. Hey, Miss Linda. How y'all doing?
We're doing great. Did you get the email that I sent you for Ken's stuff?
I did, Linda. I've been so busy that I just I haven't had the time. And
okay.
I'm going to shoot him in. Let's put it this way. Tomorrow is the Republican primary. And I basically won my debate. I don't need to debate anymore. I'm tired. My chest hurts so bad from talking. My chest is so heavy. My body just aches all over. You just don't know.
So I was going to address all the... Go ahead.
Well, I wanted to give Robert a little piece of advice. Just something, something to keep up your sleeve so that, you know, when you're down there and these you get one of these gas bags that's in front of you just yakking about something and you really don't want to listen to them, just use this one. Just ask them if they know the difference between a bull and an orchestra.
Oh, I did. Let me tell you, can I, real quick.
Do you know the difference between a bull and an orchestra, Robert? The bull has the horns in the front and the butthole in the back.
Oh, God Almighty! But let me tell you, and then I'll let you go. I just wanted they're trying to change the Venice High School Indians football team to another name, just like the Washington Redskins, right? And I made a point. I put this in the Sarasota Herald Tribune. Somebody deleted it because it was supposed to go in there, but I have it on my Facebook. I said, does everyone remember the commercial how the American Indian was crying because America was polluting the United States of America?
Oh, God, that's a little...
Okay. This was to my memory of my football coach's pal in Hodges. Coach Hodges just passed away 2 weeks ago, and I was very saddened. And I said, does everyone remember the commercial how the American Indian was crying because America was polluting the United States of America? I do. Do not believe in Common Core and quit changing adjectives to describe nouns because things that speak for themselves. The rule of law created hatred and bigotry towards all Americans. Just make sure the school board does not change the name of this high school Indians to the NFL team Buffalo Bills, which is a catering service in Venice, because Buffalo American Indians are my family too, because they represent America too. A true Spanish Jew, officially American Indian Jew me.
What I would do, Robert, instead of, I mean, you know, I would shake him up. Look, instead of going through the explanation, trying to point out just how ridiculous they're being, I would propose a new name. The Venice Feudal Serfs.
You're funny, Rod. I had to call him because I think one of my constituents is mad at me. Which I don't care anymore, you know. You know, she sent me a message. She says, you know, if someone has a family member that you think is weird, but you don't know it, but you don't know who it is, it's probably you. And I just thought, wow, you know, I wonder if she threw that at me and turned on.
Well,
I couldn't tell.
Wow.
So I said, I responded to that picture, and I said, it's not me. And she writes back, ha ha. So
wow.
I don't know. Does it sound like she meant that for me too? I don't know.
I just had a picture pop in my head, a campaign button you should have. Which was from the old movie Blazing Saddles with Mel Brooks dressed up as the Indian.
They tried to block me into the post office parking lot today. One lady was trying to walk behind my car so she could get hit, so I could hit her. Yeah, you know, I mean, you know, they're pissed. They're just pissed because today
this is where the towel and the cowboy boots would come in handy. Just get out of the car. Oh, hey, are you good?
But the thing is, Ron, I attacked Governor Scott again. I attacked him again today. This girl on the radio show in Sarasota just questioned about Venice Hospital for me. Okay? I won the debate. I got them with their flies down. I basically said, tell the 750 billion, the doctor accused me that it was about a $750,000 surplus. I said, 700 billion people, 700 billion Frenchmen cannot be wrong that agree with me. That's exactly what I said. In other words, I said, F, you know what, you to all of them in a nice way. But you know, I don't have to do anything anymore, Ron. I did the dirty work. I busted my butt all summer long.
Okay? I hope you win it. I mean, I absolutely do. I wish I could go down there and vote for you. And, you know you're talking about Frenchmen. You reminded me of something else that I read today, and I don't know if anyone else read this. The president, the French president, has dissolved their government.
Of course. Oh. But see, this is a clincher, Ron. And you know what? This is a clincher. And I have to tell you this, because I called the Pauls out too. Your pals, Pauls, your buddies. Okay, called them out too. The reason why I called them out is because Gonzalez tried to take my father's credit away from me and give it to somebody that didn't deserve the credit. Right? That's number one. And number two, I called the Pauls out because my father was Doc when Kentucky Military Institute came down here in Venice, Florida in the winter quarters. My dad took care of him. So I needed help. So I wrote to him, and they liked me on Facebook. So then I wrote a letter to Sarasota Herald. I said, if Marco Rubio and Gonzalez try to take KMI away from me, I will file a lawsuit for both of them, meaning the Pauls too, if they endorse Gonzalez. You understand? I put the Pauls in a corner. They're for Kentucky. They need to defend Kentucky Military Institute. And if they don't, they're in hot water with me. Okay? And that's it.
There you go.
Well,
all right.
I had to fight fire with fire. That was my last weapon.
There you go.
I used it two days before.
What's on your mind, Miss Linda?
Well, I was going to address the first part of your show, which was great, by the way. When you were describing our lovely, illustrious government, about 3 weeks ago, I think Mikey had, and he can correct it in the chat room or whatever, or call in. He had a gentleman on there. I think there were two people, but one was talking about what you were describing. And the people who are sort of running the show and the ones in control, when you talk about the taxes, et cetera, that you are not in control, and that's true, it doesn't matter if it's somebody trying to break into your house or harm your family or somebody in government who's doing the same thing in a different manner. They're predators. You have to know who your enemies are. These people are psychotic. And it's got to change. I don't know who, when, how, or why, or what, but it's got to change because this is evil. They are freaking evil. I mean, I was listening to some blurb on the internet. It was a written thing by a Rep. Steve King, and he's going off the rails saying that if President Obama doesn't deal with ISIS in the manner that we think he should, then that's a constitutional crisis. I mean, this is what we're seeing.
Our whole damn government is a constitutional crisis, but you're absolutely correct. And, you know, one of the things, if you stop and think about it, what else would a government do when the powers that be find they're in the position that they were in after World War II? I mean, you think about it. There has never been, not once, another government on the face of the earth that has held the position that the United States currently holds and has held since the fall of the Soviet Union, quite honestly, the Soviet Union was the last linchpin, the last impediment to a truly global empire.
Mm-hmm.
Think about that. You think about that.
Wow.
Because after World War II, you remember, I mean, we've all read the history lessons, right? That after World War II, at the end of World War II, the United States was the largest creditor nation.
Okay.
Everyone turned to us to borrow money.
Money.
Now think about this. Let's think about the first half of our history as the United States.
Okay.
When there was a monetary system that fluctuated back and forth between gold and silver. And
mm-hmm.
I've explained and talked about why
yes.
that occurred. And I believe wholeheartedly that the sole reason that that happened was because Congress tried to fix the value of money, whether it be gold or silver.
Right.
Rather than doing what the founders did, and I don't know that they fully understood the
mm-hmm.
mistake. When they first went out to determine what should be the unit of measure for
mm-hmm.
the U.S., for the United States, for currency, they went out into the marketplace to see
okay.
what was most widely accepted by the largest number of people in trade. In trade, and what that ended up being was a Spanish milled thaler, or taler,
mm-hmm.
which we know as pieces of eight. And
yeah.
they collected several of them. They weighed them. They got an average weight. And so that's what they fixed the weight and measure
okay.
of our currency
okay.
as a specific number of grains of silver that was 0.999 fine. Right?
Okay.
Now, at that point, they fixed that weight of silver against a weight of gold.
Okay.
And that created an artificial market. What it did, that was that they, without even realizing it, I think, what they did was they were fixing markets. They were, that was central economic planning even without meaning to be. Because
wow.
now you've given a fixed value of one unit against the other.
Yeah.
And the natural consequence of that was that the smart money began to move to the other unit because it was more highly valued and prized, the exchange.
Mm-hmm.
They set up the exchange rate. Now, let's fast forward to 1933. What happened to all our gold in the United States? The government took it away. Why? Why did they confiscate all the gold? Because they could not continue running the system
uh-huh.
with that competing metal, gold and silver, because they couldn't manipulate it strongly enough. They couldn't hypothecate enough paper against the
right.
gold, and people were seeing through that. So they confiscated all the gold. Then comes World War II. And at the end of World War II, we have the entire globe ties their currency to the U.S. dollar.
Yep.
Now, what happens in 1971? Richard Nixon, in violating the Bretton Woods Agreement, effectively confiscated all the world's gold. They didn't have to physically take it from them and put it
yeah.
in our vaults.
Right.
No, they just made it worthless because then
Jeez.
You had to have U.S. dollars. It didn't matter how much gold you had. It mattered how many U.S. dollars you had in your reserves, in your banks. And to solidify that, we tied the dollar to oil. And at that time, the rest of the globe was experiencing an industrial revolution. You know, it wasn't all that long removed, 1948 to 1971, that all those countries in Europe and Japan and the islands, the Philippines and what, had been completely decimated.
Sure.
And so they were still in the process of rebuilding. So they find themselves in need of oil more than they're in need of dollars or gold. But
mm-hmm.
dang it, if you're going to buy oil, you got to have dollars. So now you've put the entire globe on that hook And the last bastion was the Soviet Union. And even they had to bow and scrape because they needed dollars just as bad as everybody else. They didn't have their oil fields developed at that time.
Right. So I guess the best question, when we keep talking about the history of these things and that you put it in a great timeline, if Ron Golden could go back to the Constitutional Convention, would a truly free society look like to you, and how would you accomplish it?
I think they came pretty close. I think that some of the language should have been changed,
right,
so that it was that the federal government could not directly tax citizens of a state. The government could only tax the state itself, not individuals. And the state would owe, based on the amount of representation the state enjoyed in Congress, based on the number of senators and representatives divided up. That's how it was designed to work. Okay? Because that was really the big stumbling block with the Articles of Confederation. They had no way to force anybody to pay their fair share. God, I hate using that term. They didn't have any way to force the states to pay their fair share the Revolutionary War and the war effort. I don't think anyone can argue that it was a necessary war, that it was a necessary good effort, a reasonable effort, and one that should have been undertaken. Now, all this stuff we've been doing, playing political, geopolitical war, is entirely different, and we see that it's painted us into a corner, so to speak. But I would not have created the standard between gold and silver. I would have let the marketplace determine that.
Okay,
they had settled on what was most widely accepted as a unit of trade was the dollar. So let's adopt the dollar, which is 375 and one quarter grains of 0.999 pure silver. That is the money of account of the United States. Now, let the market decide what the exchange rate is between gold and silver. The market does that better than anybody. That way you're not placing a valuation as a government entity. You're not placing a value on your unit of currency. You're just stating this is the standard. It's going to be this coin, and it's going to weigh this much, and it's going to be pure silver. That's it.
Now, how would you address the central planning, central banking issue and
Would not have allowed it to occur. And it's certainly not constitutional. And they knew it.
Right.
But that didn't stop them from doing it.
And the same thing with the border security, the United Nations, and all the evil things like FEMA and EPA and all that nonsense. How would you have stopped that?
I don't know how you do. I mean, I believe that Wilson should have been tried for treason for even attempting to establish the League of Nations.
Absolutely.
And you know, you go back. As a matter of fact, the guy was talking about it on the radio tonight. Go back to the League of Nations. Look at what was going on. Okay, you come the end of World War One. They're trying to establish this League of Nations, and there was a problem between Mussolini in Italy and Ethiopia. Now, Ethiopia and Libya, or Libya, Ethiopia and Italy had a treaty. And Italy violated that treaty. They built a military installation right on the border in an area that was disputed territory. So what does Ethiopia do? They go and they appeal to the nations at the League of Nations. Said, hey, these guys are in violation of their treaty, and they're in violation of international law. You know, something needs to be done. What did the League of Nations do? They passed a whole bunch of resolutions and argued amongst themselves over what should be done. So they're all sitting there wringing their hands. Oh, gosh, golly gee, what do we do? I mean, you know, they're like a puppy the first time he got a hold of a dog in heat. Now you got it. What are you going to do with it? Well, they don't know what to do with it. And so what happens? Mussolini gets pissed. France sides with Ethiopia. France and England, they get together and draw up a treaty and side with Ethiopia. So now Italy says, well, France and England have betrayed us, so they side with Germany. Italy sides with Germany. And who comes along with this guy, Adolf Hitler, and says, huh, you know what? These fools, they're impotent. They can't. They're not going to do anything. They can't do anything. I'm going to march. I'm going to put together my army. And let's see what they do. And what did they do? We know what they did. They did nothing.
Yep.
And
wow.
There started World War II.
Jeez. Oh, what a mess.
And we didn't learn our lesson in World War I, after World War I with the League of Nations. So after World War II, we said, okay, now we're in the driver's seat now. We will have our United Nations. And one of the first things they did was establish Israel. And I'm not trying to say anything bad against Israel. You know, it's not a Jewish thing from where I sit. I really could care less. But I believe that the reason that I think that the powers that be in the U.S. looked at the situation and said, you know what, nothing could be better than to allow them to establish, because they're gonna draw the ire of the Muslims and the idiots over there and keep their focus on their hatred for the Jews while we're busy doing what we want to do, which is securing an empire that is global.
Right.
But now we're seeing, I believe, what we're seeing right now is the crumbling of that empire. And you see China and Russia and Brazil and India and South Africa, and to a large part the European Union. You know, the European Union's trying to have its butter on both sides of its toast. Okay? No, I mean, it really is. It's trying to have its cake and eat it too. You know, we can't discount the fact that the United States, regardless of the currency situation, is still a supreme economic power and force to be reckoned with in the world at large. And even though we're in a weakened state, because now the wagons seem to be gathering against us, you know, as far as the currency situation is concerned, and a lot of people around the world resent our intervention. You know, when you're the king of the hill, everybody wants to knock you off. And we've done a lot to thumb our nose at the rest of the world in the meantime. Yes, Robert.
I'm sending this to the letter of the editor. This is my last thought for tomorrow. Tomorrow is primary election day. I am tired of debating. May the two unknown of Sarasota County, Florida candidates, District 74, Sarasota County, Florida, both do not receive any votes because both have lost my vote. I caught everyone with their fly down, and I hope you all have a good day tomorrow, because since I am an independent write-in candidate for District 74, according to one person said to me, my vote does not count till November. I am in this race for freedom, principle, and justice for all, and all journalists that tried to scare me, and all politicians that tried to scare me, and all the rest of you, I will not bow down or kiss anyone's jack. Respectfully, me. That's it. That's all I got to say. How's that?
It seems to me that you've had a wonderful introduction into the world of local politics.
Yep, I did. And the reason why I said Jack, that's my brother's middle name. I ain't even type my own brother, so I don't care. Really, I really don't care.
It's really, you know, it's despicable
It is despicable, Ron.
It absolutely is despicable. What we have allowed to happen mm-hmm. in our communities, in our states, and in large part our federal government. And I got news for you guys. There was a plan put in place quite some time ago by a group of guys. And one of them, well, hell, more than one of them, several of them are Fox News contributors. And every time I see that SOB and they call him a freaking hero, Oliver North, I just want to punch him in the Adam's apple. And here's the thing. Let's look at the line of succession. Starting in 1972, when this Bretton Woods and OPEC oil agreement thing went through, from 72 until 2001 and beyond, you had a group of players: Henry Kissinger, Donald Rumsfeld, Richard Cheney, George H.W. Bush, a guy named Paul Wolfowitz. And then comes a whole cast. And I hate to keep harping on this, and Robert, I'd mean no disrespect at all, but I want you to go back and look at the number of people who held high-level cabinet positions in our federal government from 1972 to 2001 that held dual citizenship.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I know exactly what you mean, but I can't remember the names.
Oh, there's plenty of them.
I understand that.
Michael Chertoff.
Yes.
Michael Chertoff comes to mind. Wolfowitz.
I just sent the letter, Ron. I just sent it.
Look, there is a collection of people, a group of people. Now, this thing that was created with Oliver North, George H.W. Bush, Paul Wolfowitz, and a few others, and I'm bad with names, so I don't remember everybody's name, but there was a plan that was put together called Rex 84. And it was for something they called COG, Continuity of Government. There's a great YouTube video of a senator asking Oliver North during congressional hearings about Rex 84 and continuity of government. And the esteemed senator from Hawaii said, I believe that is a subject that is quite sensitive, and we won't touch on that here.
Wow.
Now, continuity of government, if you go back and read their plans, okay? Go back and read it. I encourage everyone here to go back and read the papers on continuity of government. And I think what you're going to see is the very same thing that I see. It's not what we think of as a continuation of the government at hand. It is instituting a new government by executive fiat. Okay? And that was done. And it was done on September 11th, 2001. Do we remember who was in the command control bunker calling the shots? Dick Cheney.
Yep.
You know, see, that's
it was
all
not the president of the United States. Look,
yeah,
it was
I
not the president
that.
Of the United States calling the shots. It was Dick Cheney. And how did he get there? the President of the United States handed him full authority over all of our civil air defenses through FEMA.
But through FEMA,
a thing in bureaucracy. FEMA was created during that time frame with Oliver North, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld. They created FEMA. They created FEMA. And then when Cheney is vice president, the president gives to him dictatorial authority. Should there ever be any kind of an emergency?
Let me tell you something, Ron. You know why there's no middle class? I figured out the answer. It's all the fading middle class is diminished. It's disappeared in
now,
the Bermuda
Triangle. I want you to do me a favor.
That's where it disappeared.
I want you to do me a favor. Robert, I want you to do me a favor.
What?
You keep in your mind everything that I've just been talking about with Ollie North, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld. Keep that in your mind and go to YouTube on your computer and pull up the video of George Bush sitting in that elementary school in Florida when that Secret Service agent walks in and whispers in his ear. You bear in mind what we're talking about, and you look at the expression on the man's face.
I remember it very well. And remember when I was in Miami with you and Bill Strong trying to straighten out my stepson? And I told you that George Sr. loved China so much and he wished that their model was our model. Right then and there, I was thinking about it. I always thought about Iran, but I really wasn't quite sure whether I should go for it. But when someone attacks my father 6 feet under his grave and he can't defend himself, I'm gonna defend my father. And I've already done that. I won the battle today. I won it. And now everybody's pissed off at me, Ron.
Robert, if they're pissed off at you, you must have done something right. But my point is with Bush, you know, I don't think that Bush is junior. I don't believe that he's any kind of mastermind of anything. I think he was a stooge in large part. Mm-hmm. And I believe the look on his face was, holy shit, they're actually going to do it.
Do it, yeah.
Yeah. It was deliberate, but you know,
he
today,
knew.
Ron,
I know, but Ron,
I got an endorsement on a page. I boosted up. I had to spend $200 on an ad because I had to raise my own campaign money for my charities, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because it's a nonprofit campaign. And I got endorsed by a professor at Stanford University, so I must be doing something right.
Now, man, no wonder you didn't get elected if it's nonprofit.
I did that for a reason, because I'm going to bury non-for-profit, because non-for-profit is a bunch of crap. It really is, Ron. There's a fine line between nonprofit and non-for-profit. There's a fine line, and that's why Hobby Lobby won the decision. I lobbied Hobby Lobby. I literally faxed him one of my letters that I wrote to the firefighters about unions. You know, I faxed him that letter. And then, ironic, I faxed him that letter. They won the ruling. Hobby Lobby won that ruling. And then also, the disabled won about the unions because of what I said about unions. It's just ironic that both rulings were set by the Supreme Court. That was back in July, but I never said anything. I lobbied those two rulings. You understand? And I won. Then I won. If you want another truth. I don't care if I don't get it. At least I did something. I did something for the principle of freedom, justice, and principle. It's all about principle now. This is principle. This fight
you're
is
right.
About,
and
it's,
you,
it's about.
I'm going to tell you that I think you should. I'm going to play a short clip, really short. I think you should send this to the local newspaper.
I'm about to whip somebody's ass. Oh, I'm about to whip somebody's ass. Oh, if you don't leave me alone, you're gonna have to send me home. 'Cause I'm about to whip somebody's ass.
It's one of my favorites.
That's what's gonna happen to me 9/11 in September. They're gonna come to my house. They're gonna come to my house, Ron.
We're going to hear it on the news. Venice, Florida has been leveled by a terrorist attack.
I swear to God, man, helicopters are just flying very, very low over my house. Unbelievable. I swear to God. You know what I do? I wave to them.
With the towel.
Yeah, I do. I swear to God. I mean, everybody
that's
is just. Oh man, I'm in so much. I'm so much in debt, Ron. I'm so much in debt. It's not even funny. Yeah, you know, this race broke me, but I don't care.
You know what, Robert? You're getting a hell of an education because we're going through it just with our own city council. I mean, the whole San Diego County is like that. I mean, every single city is going through this. And all of us who get what we understand about the regional and the greening of the state, they're pushing Agenda 21 in every single town, and it's like it's on steroids.
Oh,
it's
already happening here, Linda. But don't you understand if the polls? Let me say one thing. You know, hang on. If the polls, if Rand Paul endorses Julio Gonzalez, I'm leaving this county, and I'm going to Tonga. You understand? I'm leaving. I really am. So if those two boys, Dr. Paul Sr. and Dr. Paul Jr., endorse Julio Gonzalez, we're done. Do you understand that? You don't understand, guys. I'm serious.
Yep.
We're done. Let me tell you why. Because the Zahid Temple, my temple – I never thought fraternity organizations like that, like the Masonics, never got involved in politics. And they held a campaign stump in their temple. And I didn't think about it. The more I thought about it, it kept on rubbing me the wrong way, right? I attacked my own temple. You know what I said to them? If they're against me, then I just won't donate any more monies to them anymore.
Well,
period.
Yeah, you can do that. Well, you know what, guys? It's been fabulous, and I wish you all the luck in the world, Robert, but you may be going to Tonga soon.
Well,
hopefully it's not one of those dugouts, you know. That.
but I put the poles in a corner for you guys. You understand? I did it for you. And if they back Gonzalez, I'll never speak to them anymore, and I will not support them. Or I quit supporting Judge Jeanine. You know, I don't support her anymore.
I don't support any of them.
No.
I really don't. I don't send them any money. I don't send them anything.
No.
Everybody's got their hand out. Everybody's jingling their hat.
Sure.
Got their hand out, you know.
Yep.
Hey, but, you know, I still get stuff from Support Hillary for 2016.
Oh, wow.
Go
ahead, Linda.
I was going to say, I know that Mikey B. had predicted that Hildebeest will be our next president. Of course, I'm ready to blow my brains out with that one. But if she gets elected, we got to put her in one of those Halloween witch costumes, riding a broom, and on the back of the broom it should say Air Force One.
I want to ask you. This is totally off topic. But has anyone seen the new series on TNT Network called The Last Ship?
No.
Only heard about it.
It's kind of disturbing. I only just found it Saturday. So because I have, you know, on demand, I watched all 8 episodes Saturday evening and Sunday. And wouldn't you know, but Sunday evening at 9 o'clock was the season finale. To give you a quick Cliff Note synopsis, it's a U.S. naval destroyer that is in the Arctic doing research with 2 scientists on board doing research. Nobody on board the ship except the 2 scientists knows what they're doing. They're there for 5 months. While they're up there for this 5 months, there is a global pandemic, a virus, that has destroyed, wouldn't you know it, 80% of the population of the world. And these scientists are working on a cure or a vaccine. And so once they find out, you know, people are realizing, hell, their families are probably all dead. And so they're running around the Atlantic and Pacific trying to get, you know, monkeys and all this other stuff for this scientist.
Yeah.
And she finally finds the cure. And they come back to the United States, and they're in radio contact with a lady who was higher up in the government when they left. She's pretty much now the acting president, and she's got a couple hundred state troopers from Maryland with her.
Oh, geez.
And so they dock the ship, and they're like, oh, my gosh, and they've got this awesome, amazing, state-of-the-art laboratory. And so they disembark the ship, and they're all, thank God it's over. They've got the cure. Now they can create tons of this serum, and they can cure people that are sick, and everybody else that's not sick will be immune once they get the shot, only to realize that what this lady is doing is playing God, and they're lining people up, telling them that they've got this thing that helps doesn't cure it, doesn't get rid of it, but it helps you live longer until maybe they find the cure. What they're doing is they're euthanizing people.
Oh, my God.
And they're burning the bodies to run the power plant to power the city.
Oh, God. Oh, wow.
And I'm like, boy, that really hits home.
Sure does.
Especially, you know, after today, the one doctor over there that was being treated with the cure is now dead.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Interesting. Just food for thought.
It's unbelievable.
Don't take any vaccinations, folks.
I met 2 homeless people this past weekend, and they told me their story. 2 homeless people. Unbelievable. It's just amazing how many people I've met and talked to. It's just unbelievable. And I'm glad I had the opportunity to represent everybody.
You have as well. And, you know, if you're going to be homeless, Florida's the place to do it.
Yeah, that's it.
Let you wrap it up, and thanks, you guys. It's been great. I'll check the rest in the chat room. Thanks, guys. Be blessed.
Guys, thanks for calling in, Miss Linda, Robert. Good luck with the election tomorrow. Just about out of time. I want to remind everyone to tune in here tomorrow night at 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time right here, Patriot Families, for Bill Strong and the guys down in Indiana or up in Indiana, depending on where you're at, for the Hoot and Holler Show. And then right here Wednesday night, 7 p.m. for Miss Linda Sills with Right from the Left Coast. Then on Thursday night, 6 p.m., Miss Terry Rowland with Patriot Education. And at 9 p.m., I want you to go over to my brother Mike at Higher Truth Radio and tune into his show. Mike always does a great show. He has some great guests. It really always gives you something to think about. Guys, I want to thank you for tuning in. Thanks for being a part of the whatever we are, group of naysayers, you know, the rabble-rousers, that's us. Oh, Mikey is taking 2 weeks off. You're going to be back on 9/11. Mike, you're going to have a hell of a story on 9/11 to report, sir. And I understand needing a break. I truly do. I really struggled with whether or not to do a show this evening. But I decided to go ahead and do it, and I'm glad that I did. And I'm glad that we had everybody call in. Guys, surely I can find another song to take us out with. I was really trying to find a song that I heard, or kind of a parody that I heard tonight on my way home, and I have yet to find it, but it was awesome. And the guy was talking about things that men do not do. And he said one thing that men, real men, don't do is they don't sit down to pee. Only liberals do that. And then they broke into, mamas, don't let your babies grow up to be men who sit down to pee. It was hysterical, if nothing else. Absolutely hilarious. But guys, I appreciate you tuning in, and we will see you tomorrow night and Wednesday night right here at Patriot Families. So keep your head up, keep your chin up. It's going to get better, but folks, it's going to get a lot worse before it gets better. Just remember that. God bless you guys. Thanks for tuning in, and we will see you later. Bye-bye.
Never mentions the word addiction. In certain companies. Yes, to tell you she's an orphan. After you meet her family. Keeps a lock of hair in her pocket. She wears a cross around her neck. Yes, the hair is from the little boy. And the cross is on what she has, I meant. Pull those strings down.